I can't believe how many families are suffering from this disease.
I now know that addiction is a family disease.
I thought no one in my family was an addict.
I still feel scared to death every day.
I don't know how to be a parent anymore.
These past few years have been absolutely the toughest time of my entire life.
My wife and I don't agree, and this is another big problem.
I don't want this to be a secret anymore. That makes it even worse.
If I have shame and guilt, how can my daughter ever get better?
Being with other parents is being with people who really get it, and that helps me a lot.
I've met some incredible people.
I can help other people, and I feel better every time I just talk about all this stuff with my group.
My life is turned upside down.
Even when my son isn't doing so well, we seem to be okay.
Talking with other parents helps me stay sane and not to feel so lost and alone.
There are good people, good places to get help for my daughter and for our entire family.
I have hope. I have to. I am not giving up my daughter.
I want to help others.
I've met some of the most special human beings. I'm very grateful.
Talking with the other parents is helping me to stay sane.
Hi, everybody. My name is Steve. My wife and I have two sons, and our youngest son is marking just about a little over 5 years in recovery. It was many more years before that of not being in recovery and some of the scariest times of my life. Unthinkable was going on. And here I am today feeling absolutely blessed about today and not thinking about tomorrow. And I know that I walked into a room and I was asking for a lot of answers, and people sat me down and talked with me and explained that maybe I was asking the wrong questions and I was clueless. And I feel that my wife and I have made great progress too by the benefit of parents, of parent groups, and all of you, and for which I am appreciative beyond words and glad to be together tonight.
Hi, I'm Vicki, and I'm happy to be here, as always. I come from a family with a history of substance abuse disorder. Most directly to me was my father, who sadly never found serenity through recovery. But on a different note, my 27-year-old daughter is now over 8 years in recovery and just living the life I think that was intended for her. So I am forever grateful for this group, for other groups, for Karen. And thank you so much for being here for me, and looking forward to hearing everybody else's shares.
Hi, this is Shobhana. my son, 22 years old, is nearly 1 year in recovery. And I have a lot to thank to this group for helping me through my unmanageable, out of control, bewildered, I want to say, mindset that I was in last year, navigating this deadly disease, ravaging through relationships and finances and mental health in equal parts. I'm looking forward to this meeting today.
Hi, everybody. I'm Steve, and I'm the father of five children, the youngest of whom has an alcohol use disorder. I am so happy and proud to say yesterday he celebrated 6 years of sobriety. And I thank you. And what I would say is he celebrated, the family celebrated, his friends celebrated. It really was a very joyous occasion. And I couldn't be happier to be here with my friends to have this meeting tonight. So looking forward to it.
Hi, I'm Mark. Steven, that's great news. So congratulations.
Thank you.
I have two daughters, the youngest of whom is 27, and she's 5 years and 7 months sober. I credit the family support groups for keeping me sober while I was going through the hell that family addiction is and child addiction is. I truly believe that the Karen family groups that I met all of you at and that I attended kept me sane and, like I just said, sober. I'm looking forward to tonight's meeting and hoping we can make a difference.
Hi, I'm Kate. I'm the mother of three sons. My oldest is 38 years old, or soon to be 38 years old, and soon to celebrate 18 years of recovery from his alcohol use disorder. I come to this room because of I'm the main support for my 35-year-old niece, who 3.5 years ago began her journey getting sober from a heroin and benzo abuse situation. She relapsed 6 months ago, and it's been hard, but, you know, we're starting to see some normality creep back in. And I don't think I could maintain a loving, kind stance if it wasn't for the people in this room. Everybody's been so helpful to me and in equalizing me and my moods. And so I'm really grateful to be here tonight.
Hi, everyone. I'm Peter. My wife and I have two sons, and our oldest son, who's in his mid-20s now, has been struggling with drug use and addiction since probably his middle or late teens. And so we as a family have been struggling with that. The first few years of that struggle was just lurching through ignorance and fear and grief and anger, and was just a terrible, benighted time. The last 3 years, it really became a journey through recovery. And it's been much better, not without its ups and downs, not without its bumps, absolutely, but much, much better. And I credit groups like this and folks like the people I share this room with for helping us get out of that very dark place and onto this road of recovery. So it's great to see everyone.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. Great to see everyone. And I raised my son and my daughter, who are now in their 40s and 50s, as a single mom. And then several years ago, when I was getting ready to retire and enjoy my grandson, my daughter was given a dual diagnosis of bipolar disorder, late onset, and substance use disorder. At that time, I had no idea there was any mental illness or addiction in my family history at all. I'm happy to report that she has been in recovery. She's now celebrating four years, 9 months, getting close to that 5-year mark, and being both sane and sober. And then, much as I had hoped that my recovery would help break the chain of addiction in our family, I had the experience of my grandson a little over a year ago on September 11th, 2020, attempt to kill himself. So it's been a journey through a year, but a really very, very positive year for him as he went through various programs hard to find during COVID. He's out in San Francisco. And he's come through a really extremely well. He spent the summer in a wilderness camp and near the Canadian border and came back very, very healthy and starting his senior year in high school. Yeah. So anyway, through all this, I've been incredibly grateful for the support of the other parents and the whole Karen community.
Hi, my name is Jay. Bonnie, good wishes for your grandson. That's a nice report. Happy to hear that. I remember the night when you were here and found out some bad news, if I'm not mistaken. I have two children. I have a son who's 27, soon to be 28. Shocking. that he's made it, which is wonderful. Very aggressive journey. He is now, to the best of my knowledge, roughly 4 years of continuous sobriety. And I thought about this evening. He is almost as much continuous sobriety as he was continuous homeless. He was homeless for 4.5 straight years every night. He was homeless a number of times before that, but they weren't quite as long. So, he and I will have a nice conversation about that, I think. My daughter decided to become part of this industry a few years ago. She's now 4.5 years sober and doing incredibly well. And I continue to do well because I continue to do all the things that I think help me do well, coming to meetings and learning as much as I can about the industry. So look forward to our conversation this evening. Seems like it's been a long time since we've been together, and I'm excited about this evening. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Susan. I have two sons. They are, let's see if I can get this right, 23 and 24 years old, and the younger one is coming up on 7 years of continuous sobriety. Oh. After some pretty serious, a suicide attempt and a lot of time in the psych ward, and then a lot of time in Karen and other amazing places. And it's just doing great. It's, just functional, dimensional, happy, healthy young man. So. Go figure. And my husband and I got sober right after him. So we're coming up on 7 years at the end of the year. Our older son, I always say the jury's out on him. His disease, if he indeed, has this disease of substance use disorder, is not as aggressive as his brother's was, but I don't think he's fully in the clear. He's living with us now, short term, which is much more challenging than having a kid who's actively using and not living with you. I'm just here to report, but our relationships are night and day from where they were 7-8 years ago. And I'm just so happy to be here, to be part of this tribe, and, to be here with my people tonight.
Hi, good evening. Sorry, good afternoon. I'm Betsy Ore. I am the regional director of the Karen Treatment Centers in New York, and not at all unfamiliar with this disease on multiple levels. So there's no part of my life really that hasn't been touched by alcoholism, child of, aunt of, niece of, parent of, recovering myself. It's definitely a family disease. And, I can actually remember, I'm listening to everyone here and thinking the first time I walked into a parent meeting, I walked right back out and I said, I'll never go back there again. I can't do it. It was terrifying to me. I wasn't ready. I couldn't do it. It was terrifying to me. And, it's been a few years and a journey myself. And, and I would say I got into this field very much because I wanted to understand a little bit more about the way I was in my own relationships and understand how this all really did affect me and the patterns of relating in my own life. And as I began to study and get into it more academically, I think somehow that gave me more permission to delve into deeper issues personally. And I believe so much in family recovery now. So very good to be here with all of you tonight. Thank you.
Welcome, Betsy. It's very nice to have you. So tonight's topic is a family disease. And as I listen to everyone's introductions, the strength and resilience is so beautiful to experience. And I know that has all come because we have viewed this as a family disease and have really worked hard on ourselves. So my son's heavy addiction to alcohol started at 16 years old, and it threatened his life on many occasions, which, as you all know, is the scariest thing about all of this. And that very real risk created a dynamic in our family, which nearly tore it apart. My wife and I, we were 100% on the same page in that we adored our son and that we needed to do everything possible to help him survive this insidious disease. But we disagreed 100% on what to do and how to do it. And that was a really big problem. She wanted lockdown. I wanted an open dialogue with him. And we both thought that our approach would save his life and the other approach could kill him. So neither of us were in a position to compromise given those strong viewpoints. We fought constantly and bitterly, which was new for us. And we moved further and further apart, putting our marriage at serious risk. And I think it's fair to say our son added fuel to the fire because he expertly played each of us off of each other. And the thing that came to our rescue was a family group meeting run by a professional where we learned from other parents. We learned that we had to be on the same page. And while there's a lot of topics that we're going to talk tonight about, which is, you know, our relationship with our kids, our other kids, my son's relationship with his siblings, for us, the thing that really threatened the family most was the fact that my wife and I weren't initially on the same page. And it wasn't good for him and it wasn't good for the family.
So one of the things that the disease does definitely is the dis-ease in the home splits up the family and splits up often parents, and couples do argue. And the structure of the family and maintaining having on the same page is one of the first goals that any marriage and family therapist would have anyone deal with when they're dealing with this disease, because kids do know how to drive a truck right through that, right through any kind of separation of theory in parenting. That has to be addressed right away. That takes a lot of work.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, that was the thing that I didn't get initially. And I think it was the parents though. The clinician said it, but it wasn't until the parents said to me, like, what do you think you guys are doing? How do you think this is going to work? And so that was really, really powerful for me. And I'll never forget, this guy was wearing a Mets baseball hat. He was wearing it backwards. And he was so powerful in my life that I'm eternally grateful for him. If I ever saw him on the street, I would give him a big hug.
I think I totally agree with you, Stephen. I had, you know, I shared before, we had the same experience in my family. And I feel like, I don't know if this is unique to addiction, but it's amazing how you can be somebody in a family with addiction, never pick up a drink or a drug, and still have it be, you know, a central force in your life. It's very hard to be in a family with this disease and not be affected by it. And we do all kinds of things to try to protect ourselves. Like, you know, Bonnie, you were saying earlier how, you know, you thought that you could break the cycle. Like, I think we talk a lot about breaking the cycle, you know, and in my experience, I think, you know, we break the cycle in some ways. Like, we break the cycle of denial and shame, but we can't, there's a genetic component to this thing and an environmental component, but certainly there's a genetic component. And so we can't break necessarily the cycle. We're just kind of have to figure out how to deal with it better than, you know, our parents did.
So everything everyone is saying is very relevant to all of us, I think. I was going through a divorce when we discovered my daughter's addiction. She had been able to pull it over our eyes for 6 years. And I never, ever thought, since I at one time was doing so much coke and other things, that I would be blinded to it. Well, I was. And the only thing that we tried during our divorce was to be bonded and united in our approach to our daughter's addiction and getting her better. Yes, I saw black. She saw white on everything. but we tried to really put some of our differences aside, go for counseling together on how to deal with our daughter. And, you know, as a kid growing up, I come from a German Jewish family, and my uncle would have shots of schnapps, they would call it, and all of this stuff. And it was a joke, but God, they were wasted, and this was the way of life for them. So to break that cycle was difficult, especially with my background. But again, a united front is really what you need when you're dealing with this.
You know, the united front, Susan, Mark, Stephen, was something my husband and I had. Our front was just really poorly educated. You know, we had heard the term tough love. And I think for us, our fear led us down the false road that we could control this disease. And the more controlling we became, the more acting out our son became. And it was a mess. And, you know, and finally, it was the family therapist who was able to talk about compassion and understanding and educate us to the disease. That this was, it wasn't that we were bad parents. It wasn't that we did something wrong. It was our son had a disease, and that disease needed treatment. And that treatment just took time, and we had to give time.
What I wanted to say was, this is great. My experience with this is a little different. My husband still does not agree that this is a disease. He does not believe in what's happening here. He still thinks that my son needs help and needs to do something or be something that he's not. And my experience has shown, I don't know that my husband will ever see me eye to eye on this, but I have carried on. I have protected my son from all other influences from my own family who don't believe in addiction as a family disease. They are in great denial about it. But I have carried on, and I protect my son from these influences the best I can. I don't protect him from his father, but I do allow my son to think for himself and to talk it out with his sponsor, to talk it out with his recovery group, to talk it out with his counselor as to the advice he's getting from people who are not in programs, so that his program and his working of his own recovery is stronger for it. And that he is constantly reminded that this is a disease. Even if you're in denial, it's still a disease. And you have to work your recovery. And that's the only way to go about it. Even if your parents don't agree, you have recovery and it has worked for you. Look how far you've come. And you can go further from here.
I think just even finding that united front is really very difficult and a very messy process. To get to that point, for the people who are lucky enough to get to it, for the couples who are lucky enough to get to it, it's because you're trying everything, right? Everything. And it's so foreign, and it's such a trauma to everyone in the family when this sort of hits a family and like a bomb is dropped, and you know, there's a lot of denial on the parents' part, certainly on the kids' part. Everybody's just trying to figure out what this is they're dealing with and all the different approaches, until finally what someone said was what is often really counterintuitive, which is a more compassionate approach and learning to separate the person from the disease and having in the united front and addressing things that way, which is, you know, far more effective, and getting support and not feeling so ashamed, like reaching out to other people and getting support in that.
Have to just add one thing to that. You said feeling ashamed. So many times when you're dealing with addiction, you're embarrassed to share it with people because you think there's something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Bullshit. It's a disease. If you have cancer, if you have this, you're talking about treatment, but this is always kept as a secret. And that to me is the most fascinating thing. Why is it such a stigma attached to this? And I think until we can deal with that question, a lot of the treatments and a lot of things will not be successful because people are still embarrassed and afraid to talk about it. And this group saved me from that. And I talk about it every day at my office. I'm actually actively raising money now to help kids in recovery, but you got to get over the stigma. There's nothing wrong with you. They're sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole pattern of keeping secrets is definitely one of these patterns that passes down through generations and families. And I think the phrase is, we're as sick as our secrets. certainly true in my family. But I did want to just say something a little bit hopeful for about single parents, which is that after we were divorced, my ex-husband became an addict. And that was, of course, covered up completely. But I later discovered that my kids had spent a lot of their childhood with him as an addict, and he still is an active addict to this day. And there's absolutely no way I can protect them from him or control him in any form at all. But I feel very grateful that people did say to me, just focus on yourself, on your own self-care, on your own recovery, and it will help in magical ways, in just completely unpredictable ways. It will help your children. The stronger you are, and the more you stay in your own recovery.
I found that to be so true, Bonnie, and I know that when my wife and I were first grappling with this, when we, after a long time of denial and just utter confusion and chaos, when we finally had some notion of what it was we were dealing with, we were very much on the same page, very aligned in our values, but I was shocked to, shocked to realize how different we were as people. And those differences, I think, dealing with the kind of ordinary run of the mill dysfunction and challenges that, families that don't have addiction in them, might be called on to deal with, would probably not have been that big a deal, but they're a very big deal in addiction, or at least they were for us. And because you're driven to such extremes and you find yourself in such extreme places without ever realizing, without ever knowing you were on a journey to this extreme place, you just sort of wake up there. And I learned, one of the things that I learned is, my wife's really good at dealing with anxiety and uncertainty and managing, her own, sort of regulating her own anxiety. And I was extremely bad at it. I was so bad at it that I was intolerable. And it really, and it's only because she has so much patience that I didn't end up as a chalk outline on a crime scene floor. And learning to take care of myself and to manage myself, as you were saying, Bonnie, that self-care, I learned that to do right by, my best shot at doing right by the people I cared most about lay in just keeping my own shit together. And that was a huge, huge lesson.
I just want to back up a second here, because I had two sons and they got sick with different childhood illnesses. And we got the medicine, or we got the doctor, and they got through those. That wasn't a family disease. Family disease that I thought it was like food poisoning or colds that you share. A family disease, when they started telling you that, that's about me. That's not that my kid has got a serious illness, but that I too have a serious illness. I didn't want to have a family disease. I didn't want to be sick. That didn't help me, I didn't think. That didn't help me take care of my kid. I wanted to get the expert, the medicine, the therapist to fix my kid. Family disease, I heard. That is a reflection of something on me. So I resisted that. I resisted that for a long time. And it hurt me. And it didn't help my kid. So the idea that I had to accept this concept of something that was alien to me.
I'd never heard of a family disease where we're all going to go to the doctor, okay, or we're all going to go to treatment. That was totally alien for years, and I was resistant to it for all the reasons that we've talked about, shame and blame and all that. Couldn't I talk my way out of this, that I had to go? So that took a long time for me to accept that, and I think that I did come to accept it after it was shared with me a few thousand times. Slow acceptance is what I would call it, to understand. And I feel that after that, I found some ways that were helpful to me and my wife and my son, who was the sickest, and my son, who wasn't sick, but who was the brother of someone who was very sick. But it was a long haul for me to get there with this concept that now we talk about so openly and with such acceptance. But that was a big hump to get to.
Steve, I was thinking the same thing while people were talking. Family to me is a very large and extended family. My parents were involved. My son was homeless and knocked on their door. Heartbreaking. That we had instructed my parents, if our son ever comes to them, love them all you want, but that's all you can help them with. And I get the phone call in my office from my mother crying. She told the doorman to tell him that she wasn't available or that she wasn't home. It extends well beyond the husband and wife. I have a daughter who suffered immensely. And started drinking probably because of that. Didn't drink at all in high school because of that. And went off to college and probably drank her PTSD because she basically became an only child and her brother never died. Mm-hmm. But she had not spoken to him more than a couple of times in 4.5 years and didn't see him ever in 4.5 years. They're 18 months apart. So the family gets very, very extended. We did our best to educate the family. We were probably educating them improperly because we weren't as educated as we should have been. It takes time. But we did our best to educate them, and they were incredibly supportive, every one of them, very supportive. And just as an aside, the one thing I would say about the stigma, I've been coming to meetings for 11 years. My son's been in this business for probably 15 or more years. He's not quite 28. It has changed a lot. There's still stigma. It has changed a lot. Unfortunately, a lot of very well-known people have had to die to help it change. And Diane Sawyer used the word heroin on the news one night when Philip Seymour Hoffman died. I don't think she ever said that on the news before. So there is some progress. I always love to see it more and faster, but it's actually moving along at a pretty good pace. There are entities, Shatterproof and others, that have really done a tremendous job. So anyway, that's just an aside. But to me, the family gets really large when this, or they're not involved at all because they're not aware of it. Even though they probably are, they know something's not right usually.
Yeah, I think for us, I don't know why we were so lucky. My impulse would be to hide this from everyone in my family, but I think because my son was so young and it was so, his life was so at risk, there was no hiding. And also, you know, the care that he needed was so beyond my ability to come up with the money for. So there was a lot of, you know, asking family members to help. But somehow, I don't know, I got this message early on that, you know, it's a family disease and it's a family recovery, that I have to focus on my recovery. I didn't know what that meant. Everyone was saying, take care of yourself. I was like, what are you talking about? My kid is, you know, half dead. How can I take care of myself? But really, once I started to both recognize that, like, keeping the focus on me and doing my recovery was the best way that I could show up for my kid, things started to get better. And it was just, it's all counterintuitive. I know I always say that, but I felt like I remember saying to a friend of mine, you know, I'm not drinking. And she said, why? This is your kid's problem, not your problem. And I just said, you know, how can I ask him to do something that I'm not willing to do? If he needs to do it, and I want him to do it, then I at least need to be able to show him that it can be done. And that's a different kind of being involved with your kid than, you know, calling school and being like, well, he hasn't handed in his homework all semester, but let me tell you about how special he is and why homework isn't really right for him. You know, the ways that I used to try to be involved in his life before, and the ways that I used to try to help before. Not really sure if this makes any sense, but I guess it was, yeah, just focusing on my recovery, doing my thing alongside him, that started to make it feel like we were on this path to recovery as a family, as opposed to just all getting sucked down the toilet with, you know, the sickest one of us.
Jay, in my family, I'll say my mother had 20 grandchildren, two of whom were heroin addicts. And the way we all participated in that family disease was we all were very actively pretending we didn't notice. And it was amazing to think you could be at a gathering with this many people and everybody pretend. Alcohol, that was okay. We're a good Irish family. We knew what to do with alcoholics. You know, we put up with that. The drug use, there was so much shame that everybody participated in the secret keeping. And to the point where both of my nieces got so sick that they almost died from this. You know, 3.5 years ago, my niece had to spend a week in the hospital from medical complications from detoxing. And the secrecy, the shame, the lack of education was all an enormous part of our family's disease, that we didn't, you know, I think, Bonnie, you said we're only as sick as our secrets, and those secrets were killing our young people.
You know, Kate, I appreciate and understand that. But what Susan was saying, I had a similar reaction to she. It became public. I don't know if I would have made it public if it wasn't public already. I think I would have, as I've shared it with lots of people who didn't know anything about it, clients and so on. But I gave a speech at my daughter's bat mitzvah. He wasn't there. 250 people were there. He wasn't. Where is he? It could not be kept a secret from that, in my opinion. And while I cried for most of that speech, which should have been 5 minutes, it probably took 15. And then, you know, on his 18th birthday, he walks out of treatment and 2 days later steals a neighbor's car, gets in a police chase, crashes, goes to jail, and it's all over Facebook. The entire town knew that he stole someone's car who had quite a number of children in town, and everyone knew them. So it was hard for it to be a secret. And imagine his sister, 18 months younger, had to go to high school the next day. It's incredible that she didn't start using a lot sooner. Had tremendous impact on her. So yeah, I get it. I don't think I would have been secretive anyway, like Susan said, but I had no choice. It's just what it was. And then I think I felt sort of compelled to let people know that this is a disease, that, you know, that we didn't do anything wrong. Maybe we did, but, you know, it was going to happen anyway.
Wow. Thank you. I just, the amount of courage that would take is astounding. I think it's sort of, I what came to mind for me is I may not like the situation, but I want to like who I am in the situation, and being able to, you know, I went through some things with my own child and everybody disappeared. All of the people that were around me, they literally disappeared. And that was really very tough to take. I became very angry. I felt very isolated and very alone.
And then I found a community, and then I became more open about it. I think that, and then I think of someone else who I know who lost a son and was very open about it, and how that really just uplifts everyone else to be able to connect and talk about it. And when we talk about a family system, and someone else mentioned a larger family system, you know, the school is a system, right? This is all about systems theory, really. And what happens in a system when things are shut down and cut off? You know, there is sort of, Murray Bowen talks a lot about like an anxiety ball that moves through a family, and how I was just thinking, as everyone was talking about the need for self-care, for everyone to keep the focus on themselves and have a solid, sturdy self. And when my energy is all over my kid, there's nothing left for me. And it and that energy ball just it snowballs into a disaster. At least it did in my family, certainly growing up. And I really had to learn where I end and someone else begins. And I think part of that in all of this is a family has to grieve together for their wishes and their dreams for their child in order to be able to begin recovery. The word grief, I think, comes up for me a lot in thinking about this, because it's very, very tough to not allow someone into your home when you love them. There is a certain amount of grief that goes along with that.
Indeed. Speaking of grief, I was, you know, just going to share that my family, my two brothers, my mom and dad are all still not understanding of this disease. And they think, you know, with enough number of prayers or advice to my son, that they would be able to fix him. So that those are some of the people that I've had to protect my son from. And I didn't mind going toe-to-toe with them and say, no, you don't have, you know, I cannot give you access to my son and access to this advice. And then I had to show up my son to say, you have to stay in your recovery. But this whole concept of grief and how isolating this disease can be. And until I could find my own support group and people who understood my story, my pain, my suffering, and then to hear my story come out of so many people's voices. And I thought it was, you know, the culture I came from, you know, the geography of the place I grew up in, or my upbringing, or because I'm a woman of color, or whatever the reason might be that I thought it was my fault, or, you know, just the wrong side of the tracks, if you will. But none of it is true. This disease is pretty universal, like McDonald's. You could just go, anyone can go there and get a meal. From a millionaire to, you know, day laborer, it's available to everybody. And unfortunately, it is prevalent everywhere. And that gives me hope, and it also removes some of that shame. The grief for me is all these ideals I had about how my life should be, how my kids should be, and what culture had told me about the success of my kids, reflecting on me. Am I a good parent? Am I not a good parent? Am I a failure because my kids have failed? Did my kids fail at all? This is a disease. My kids didn't fail. I didn't fail. But we grieve all of that. We grieve all of those illusions. Today, I'm grateful my son is alive. Bottom line, that's it. I am grateful. I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah. I agree with that completely. My daughter was actually assaulted and extremely by a cocaine addict, and extremely lucky that she managed to call 911 before she went unconscious. But yeah, I mean, very, very, very lucky that she's alive still. I just want to go back to something that both Betsy and Shobana talked about isolation. And in my family is all scattered. And of course, there was this entire pattern of secrecy and denial. And I think part of that goes back to this idea of perfectionism, which is a real pattern that I've slowly learned about in my own life, that where, you know, the whole idea was you had to keep up this very, very perfect facade to the outside world. That's happens in many, many families with addiction. And that ends up really isolating you, because you have to be dishonest. And so you really don't develop these close relationships either within your own family or just with other people who might really be able to provide that those trusting and reliable and kind of wonderful relationships that help you navigate these things. And you've remained very, very isolated because of these kinds of patterns of denial and perfectionism in my case.
You know, I always go back to having been raised in a home with a pretty raging alcoholic father. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, my eyes were so open that when it came, you know, time for me to have my children and raise them, that I was going to be open about the alcoholism. And I was going to just make sure that this just didn't happen to my kids. And, you know, it's nothing I tried, nothing my husband tried. It didn't work. It's a family disease. And for whatever reason, right time, right place for my younger daughter, she's got anxiety, other things. She was prone to it. And even though I knew what a substance abuse disorder looked like, having been raised with it, there were a number of years where it was in my face and I was in denial about it because this wasn't going to happen in my family. I was not going to live this way again. But I have to say, the moment, you know, I think it was like the last time she ended up in the ER, and that one person said to me, "This is not bipolar disorder. Your daughter is an addict." Once that got pulled off, that blindfold was gone, then I knew, boom, this, I can't control this. I can't do anything about it. We have got to get help. And thankfully my husband, you know, had been married quite a long time. He knew my father, knew my dad's alcoholism, and kind of knew that I was a little bit of an expert on this. So, but it was that denial, those first few years when you just don't want to see it. You don't want to, you know, they're coming in at 3 o'clock in the morning. They claim they were spending the night somewhere. I just wanted to believe her. I wanted to believe her. It wasn't going to happen to me again. That, you know, and it just, yeah, was bad. Very bad.
Vicki, you just nailed it. I grew up in a family, not with an alcoholic, but my dad was a Valium addict. And, you know, we didn't think there was anything wrong. He took him to calm down after a busy day of work, but it was terrible. And I only learned that he was an addict when he attempted suicide later in his life because he was so miserable and he didn't succeed. And that was a whole other thing. But with my daughter, you know, I started getting high really young, and I would get high before I walked into my house when my kids were young. And they won't know. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. And the fact that my daughter was able to pull the wool over my eyes just still to this day amazes me. But again, every family deals with it in one way or the other.
So I remember hearing so many times that if one has a substance use disorder, like my son has, that he was going to have to work at maintaining his sobriety, that he had a disease and that he had work to do forever, that this was part of the fabric of his life. And I'm asked all the time, why are you at the parent support group? I thought your kid is doing so well. Why are you still going to the meeting? I mean, why are you? Because I think that once I accepted that I too was part of this, that I had a disease, that what's worked well for me is something telling me that's what I should be doing. That I'm here because it worked for me during the scariest, roughest times. And I feel it's supporting me during the times that not only aren't rough, that are joyous. And it's that sort of acceptance for me of what a disease is for a family, that for me, I've got this too. And if I don't take care of myself this way, I could find myself in trouble.
It's like an addict, Steve, that goes to AA. I know people who are 50 years in recovery. They go to AA 3-4 times a week. They're
exactly.
Why do they go to AA? That's why. That's why. You take medicine.
Because also
it works.
And there's nothing more thrilling, honestly, in life than watching somebody else get this thing. Than seeing somebody else come in and they are suffering the way you were suffering at the worst day of your life and mm-hmm. having the hope that, you know, in a month or a year, if they stick around, they're going to be able to help somebody else get out of that hole. Like, it's just, that is one of the greatest thrills of my life.
Mm. Meetings are also a place where learning how to be a healthy family, just the way people connect with one another in meetings is a healthy family system. Usually the way meetings operate, the way people are supportive of one another, the lack of judgment, the, you know, not being overly involved and overly enmeshed with one another, but being supportive and focusing on one another's strengths. It sort of mirrors what we want to bring into a family system. You know, it really is truly what a family, I think, is meant to be in the best sense.
I'll never forget when I walked into one of these meetings for the first time. And it was such a shock of recognition and hearing not only the stories about people's qualifiers and the similarities of, you know, the behavior of the qualifiers and all the many similar ways that they were assholes and, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, and that was very educational. But the shock of recognition of hearing about the dynamics of enablement and how mm-hmm. those played out and hearing about denial and how that played out and hearing about, codependence and lack of, you know, enmeshment and all of this stuff. And it was like, holy shit, you know, what do you live in my house? I mean, it was unbelievable, but incredibly liberating, incredibly. That really did so much to dispel the shame. And it was like somebody threw all the doors and windows open and it was like, you know, letting sunshine in. It was just amazing.
So the way I think about this is, you know, we're talking about it being a family disease and, you know, I understand, Steve, where you're coming from, that, you know, you feel like you have, you know, a disease that needs to be dealt with. The way that I think about this is that this disease dropped in the middle of a family is so big. There are so many dynamics that go on that it exposes weaknesses in the family structure. You know, so if you don't communicate and you don't deal with things forthrightly, or, you know, you're the initial reaction is to just protect, you know, and not let consequences happen. You know, the reason why, you know, it feels like a family disease to me is it's so big that it's going to impact everybody, every relationship, you know, almost every situation and beyond the immediate family. The broader family and, you know, the chatter that goes on from other family members and the shaming and the, you know, and potentially, you know, the you're not doing it right. The isolation that then comes from that. I mean, to me, you know, it's that this thing is just so big and so powerful and the consequences are so potentially negative and serious that it just exposes so many things within the family dynamics that everybody's impacted.
You know what I've experienced in the last 4 years, 4+ years, when both my children have been sober? It's a great disease now. It has brought us together.
That shows you how sick we are. We're talking about that, Jake.
But it has been an unbelievable 4 years. I don't think we could have ever been any closer. I don't think we could have cared for each other anymore, all four, and extended family. So this part of the disease ain't so bad.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a crazy point, Jay. If I think about, like, you know, the last 6 years, You know, his first year anniversary, every family member, wherever they were in the country, they showed up, and not only family members, but friends. And we had 20 people out to dinner. And every year it's been a massive celebration. And people are so proud, and they're proud of this person who, prior to getting sober, was, you know, really instrumental in creating huge problems in the family, or the disease was instrumental in creating huge problems. And it was a lot of anger directed at this person. And then all of a sudden it was big family celebration. So proud, you know, we get together. So, you know, I don't disagree with the point. I think it really is a good point, because it's brought the family together after going through such stress and then getting to the other side. It's an amazing feeling.
I love what you were saying, Stephen, too, about how the disease takes advantage of weaknesses in the family system, because it creates, you know, it's opportunistic in that way. And then it also, like, flip side, offers this opportunity for healing in the family and, like, points out weaknesses. And I feel like that's so much of what we've been able to do, you know, in these years of recovery. And I remember hearing, I think it was at Karen, I remember hearing somebody talk about, like, if you had a sick plant, if you had a plant and it wasn't doing well, you know, and you took it out of the soil and you trim off the aphids and you give it the plant food, would you go plant it back in the soil that it was in before and want it to thrive? You know, and I love that analogy, because it's like, no, we need to fix the soil, you know, like, we can't just pluck our kid out of our family and go ship them off and get them well and have them come home and expect things to be different than they were. And that's been some of the most profound stuff, is those opportunities for every one of us to, you know, grow and heal and change how we relate to each other. And
I mean, I've quoted that same story, Susan. And I remember so many of us have been together during some of the worst days of our lives. And here we are with different times. And I used to hear that, the gift of recovery. And I thought, what the hell kind of gift is that? You know, what kind of gift are they selling to get me to buy in? And you know what? I got the gift, and I feel it, for which I am, you know, just beyond belief and hopeful. So I get that. I do.
It is hard to appreciate that. I heard those stories all the time also. It truly is hard to understand that it could be in what I'm going through right now, that good. Really. I don't tell my kids what to do anymore.
How fortunate we are, Jay. Indeed.
I think so.
Well, and that's where, you know, there, my vulnerabilities being exposed allows me to work on myself if I take the opportunity in a family approach to dealing with this disease. And then, you know, I think it can stretch me further than I ever imagined and change me as a person in the way I handle things, which has ultimately led to more rewarding patterns in my relationships, certainly with my children, but in the way I feel even about myself. You know, I haven't lost control. And that's where, you know, being with a group of people helps, because it's easier to see things in other people than in myself sometimes. And that community of support certainly has helped me and my family in that work. And I see it work in families all the time, you know?
I still feel lucky that I have gotten the gift of recovery, but I don't understand why that after 5 years and change, every time the phone rings and I see Phoenix, Arizona, where she lives or something, I get scared. So that is something that I'm working on getting over, but I don't know if I ever will, because that deep seated fear that something happens to her is going to be with me the rest of my life.
I guess it's a family disease.
and a day and at a time.
That is an example of,
I would have been dead by now. My daughter calls me once or twice a day. So
you're lucky.
Well, be careful what you wish for. But if I got nervous every time she called, it would not be good.
So she doesn't call me that often.
So we're on Zoom. The pandemic continues, but they can't keep us apart. Mm-mm. And it is always so good to be together. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to see everybody. Thank you, Betsy.
All right. So nice to meet all of you. Good night. Yeah.
This is a podcast by parents for parents.
We are not professionals, but parents offering our own experiences with the hope that it might help others.
We are not experts, and our words are our own, with views not necessarily shared by care and treatment centers.
Nothing that we offer in our comments should be considered instructional or diagnostic.
Definitely not treatment.
And it is not specific to any particular person, just our general thoughts based upon our own experiences with our family members.
Please visit, call, consult with healthcare professionals, your doctor, and other qualified specialists.
And do not change what your healthcare professional advises based upon anything you heard a parent say in this podcast.
We are not addiction experts.
Just parents sharing our personal experiences with other parents.